He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday midweek edition, the November 12th edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planners. Let's look at the world indices right now, mostly those ones that reside here in the U.S. We have a mixed market again today, and that is a trend that I see developing in the market with the forward PE so high on the S&P 500. We'll talk about that in a moment. The Dow is up 369 points, 48,297. I want to say that's a new all-time high in the Dow. The NASDAQ is down, however, 26 points at 23,442. That's down 0.1%. The S&P 500 is up 0.25% to 6863. That could be a new high on the S&P 500. The Russell 2000, where you have lower PE stocks than in the NASDAQ, is also up. Therein lies another trend. It's up 65 basis points to 24.74. We got good action in the bond market today. You've got the 10-year dropping to 4.07 right now. It was 4.12 yesterday. And Bitcoin remains weak in my book. It's up $403 to $104,634. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only money management firm. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And Barry, I'm watching a trend develop, and we've watched the forward PE of the S&P 500, which is heavily dominated by the tech stocks these days, right? I mean, I read that the market, the S&P, is tracking Nvidia more than it's tracking the rest of the stocks in the market, because Nvidia's become 8.8% of the S&P 500. So we got a little bit of a wonky kind of correlation there going on. But every time the S&P has reached that 23 times forward PE level, we've seen it back off. And what I'm seeing, I don't think that the big institutions want to throw in the towel and get out of the market, because you still have a strong economy. You have a falling interest rate environment, and you still have very strong earnings in the market. And I think what they're doing instead is shifting out of the Palantirs, maybe the CrowdStrikes, maybe Nvidia to some extent, the higher PE stocks. And I'm seeing rotation into the lower PE stocks, and the Dow definitely is a proxy for that.
That's what I liked about your Microsoft purchase yesterday.
You're kind of
trading, you're still in the tech space, still allocated to the tech space. You're just kind of, trading down a bit.
Trading down. That's right. What I see happening in the market right now. And I do see trading down amongst the tech stocks, too. So, money leaving maybe hot, extremely expensive Palantirs of the world. And maybe going down to Google, maybe going to Netflix, maybe going to Microsoft, which those stocks are trading at much lower P.E. ratios. So on the one hand, too, it's good to see the market spread out. But you should be aware that I think this trend, usually we've seen a lot of head fakes with this trend over the past year. Palantir always comes storming back. AMD always comes storming back. But this time it looks a little bit different to me, and I think that there is an imaginary ceiling on the S&P 500 at 23 times forward PE, which I showed in my newsletter over the weekend. So one thing I do check every day in the market is that forward PE of the S&P 500, because that is now providing a technical barrier. Someone asked me on the chat room in Seeking Alpha yesterday, what do you think of Micron here? I've been waiting to get in. Is this a good time? And I said, you know, this rotation doesn't favor a stock like that right now. You may have to see a correction to bring that forward PE down to 21 or thereabouts, 22, 21 and a half. For another entry point into those stocks. But with it up here at 23, I'm not saying to sell your high PE stocks, although we have booked several big profits because I feel like, you know, we've squeezed about as much as we're going to get out of them since April. Remember how far the market has come from April of this year. I'd have to do the math, but I do know, I remember the S&P at 4,800, and now we're at 6,800. What's the math? That's 50%, isn't it? Something like that. That's a huge number.
40%? April 8th, the NASDAQ was at 15,267.
There you go.
I'll do the math real quick, but that's, I mean, we're talking like almost
50%.
8,200 points, essentially.
Yeah, that's more than 50% move. Yeah. So it's just logic. You know, a lot of the market is just logic and putting together, connecting the dots. Now you've got those stocks that are up big time as a source for funds and a source for profit taking. You saw that with SoftBank, which is getting clobbered today, by the way. SoftBank was down 10% last time I looked. They needed to raise some funds for a lot of their AI initiatives here, and they saw as a source for funds NVIDIA, which they've got a big profit in. And SoftBank is not the only example. There's many examples of even down to institutions our size, right, where we have large profits in a lot of these stocks. And number one, we're nervous about those profits. We certainly don't want to give them up. And I look at the risk-to-reward ratio at this current point in time. You don't have a whole lot of reward opportunity to the upside because of the high PEs, and you have a lot of risk to the downside, right? We're all aware of that.
Well, it's a 53% move.
53%. That's unheard of.
That's a 53% move up, yeah.
And we called it. On the day, on that Monday, we called the bottom of the NASDAQ, and we have not rescinded that call since then. But I've also watched, and I've been warning in recent weeks in the newsletter, we've seen those valuation ratios hit some extreme levels. Now, price to earnings is not the only valuation ratio. Price to sales is also a very important evaluation ratio. We were hitting all-time highs on that last week, even higher than the year 2000, which was the dot-com bubble, the bursting of the dot-com bubble. Price to book value, which I don't know that it's as relevant in today's world where tech dominates. Price to book value is more relevant in financials and banks and whatnot. But still, regardless, you're hitting all-time records on price to book value for the S&P 500. And ditto on price to cash flow. So all of those, and I publish those in my newsletter every Saturday, a graph of those four valuation ratios and where we're at now. The last two sugar highs we had were 2021 coming out of COVID. That was a huge sugar high. And then you got to go back to the year 2000, which was the dot-com bubble. We're going to have a little bit more on that today. And I have written some articles here recently comparing where we're at now with the year 2000. And I continue to say we don't have an earnings problem in the market. We have a multiple, not multiple problems, a multiple problem. But we do have, I guess, multiple problems because there's more than one multiple in the market. And that's going to put a lid. That's going to lower the reward ratio and raise the risk ratio. But having said that, money is not wanting to leave the market right now. I see it rotating into other stocks, large caps, maybe not the mega caps, the seven big ones, but maybe the next tier down where you're seeing lower PE ratios and more reasonable valuation levels. And we'll have more on that during today's show. But it was a big trend yesterday. You had the Dow up 1.2% yesterday. The NASDAQ was down 0.25%. And it's this valuation conundrum or dilemma that we have right now. And right now, Wall Street is solving the dilemma by moving out of, not all of them, some of them remain in those areas constantly. They never move out of the high PE stocks. More on that in a bit. We'll be right back. This is the Best Stocks Now show. Back here to the second segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Here's something I don't think is going to happen, but Trump likes to get under Gavin Newsom's skin. He wants to drill. Trump wants to drill off the California coast. I can just see the drilling rigs showing up in front of Gavin Newsom's house, you know, and we're ready. Where do you want us? You know, I'm not for that drilling off the coast of California. Of course, nobody wants it in their backyard. I have fished those waters 100 miles out off of, most of it's Mexican waters that we used to fish, however. Really, if you head due west out of San Diego, you're in Mexican waters in about 15, 20 miles out. But we fish tuna out there, and that's just not going to happen. But I do know that, you know, they pay like triple for gasoline what we pay here in South Carolina. Because of the heavy taxes and, you know, the refineries, they've shut down the refineries. Many of them have closed, and many oil companies are leaving California. Oil, believe it or not, California has quite a bit of oil, not only on the land, but also offshore. SoftBank slumps.
The tar pits, right?
Yes, the old array of tar pits, right. The SoftBank slumps after offloading NVIDIA stock. And, you know, they, like I said yesterday, they didn't offload the stock because they don't think it's, to me, I would rather keep my my NVIDIA stock than selling it and buying into a bunch of private ventures. But, you know, the decision that SoftBank made, and it's getting hit today, is down 5.3%. In fact, it is now down 28% in the last 2 weeks. And as I've mentioned, SFTBY has not been that good of a performer. It has underperformed the S&P 500 over the years, so they have not made a lot of good decisions in recent years, but they continue to invest in some of the most highfalutin areas of the private business world especially. Okay, now back to that rotation. You know, not every firm will rotate. Firms like, I mentioned Wedbush in my, commentary yesterday, and of course Cathie Wood's ARK funds, they don't rotate, really. I mean, they are pretty much tech all the time, pretty much bullish on tech all the time, so they ride tech up and down no matter how expensive it is. And there's a lot of firms like that, right, that stay put. We, on the other hand, are unconstrained. I don't run a semiconductor ETF. I don't run an AI fund. I don't run a technology fund. I go where the growth is. And, you know, that doesn't, you know, confine me to only technology stocks. You know, one of the best growth stocks in the market today happens to be a non-technology stock. In fact, yesterday I said it might be the best stock in the market right now. You'll see an article, hopefully, later today on it on Seeking Alpha. I dusted that off, got it done, checked all the grammar, all the dots, the I's. You know what? It's time-consuming. It takes a long time. Grammarly helps a lot because it catches a lot of things that the eyeball doesn't see. But hopefully later today, I'm not going to disclose it. I'm going to make you watch. Hopefully you're following me on Seeking Alpha, Bill Gunderson, and you'll get an alert when that article goes live. But I think I make a very good case for what I think is one of the best growth stocks in the market today, and it happens to be a non-technology stock. Let's see here. We've got we mentioned SoftBank selling their NVIDIA. And the stock and slumping, and it's bringing down the Japanese market. A SoftBank plays is a pretty big player over there. Now, TD Wealth, I guess that's Toronto Dominion. I guess that's the wealth division. They're saying that today's market, they took up the they weighed in on the debate over whether what we're seeing today resembles the dot-com bubble of the early 2000s, and they kind of came to the same conclusion that we have. There's real profits today and not just promises. And that was a big issue back then. I was there. I watched it. I witnessed it. I saw companies with very little in the way of sales and no earnings whatsoever trading at huge multiples on those sales, and if they did have earnings, they were trading at huge multiples on those earnings because of the dot-com promise that just because all of a sudden we have a presence on this newly created web out there, the World Wide Web, all of a sudden sales and profits are going to explode for us. Well, that didn't really pan out for everybody. In fact, the vast majority of them, it was like the California Gold Rush. It was Levi's, and it was the people that made picks and shovels and whatnot that survived, and a few of them struck gold. Well, I would say that about the year 2000, too. It was like the gold rush of 1849.
Well, some of those companies didn't even have revenue. I mean,
no.
they had new subscribers.
They had a website.
Yeah, they didn't even have a way for you to some of them didn't even have a way for you to give them money on the website, right? It was just a website.
Yes, I think AOL was a good example. It didn't cost anything to open up an email address on AOL. You've got mail. They really never did really monetize it all that well, and Time Warner paid a horrible price for AOL, which isn't even really around today. And the same can be said for Yahoo. Which got replaced by Google along the way. Yahoo became kind of a pink sheet stock. I don't know who owns it now. It has reemerged.
I was just thinking of that in my head. Like, I don't really know who owns it.
They have Yahoo Finance. And I know some people that work for Yahoo. He told me who it's owned by. I can't think of it offhand. I think it is owned by a publicly traded company. But the point is, today there's real earnings in a lot of the – now, not all of them, okay? A lot of these companies take advantage of the AI hype, right? And they start putting out news announcements. Oh, well, we're going to start we're going to start supplying energy to data centers. That's another key word right now, data centers. Crypto is a key word. We're going to start building our reserves of Bitcoin. And these are all buzzwords that the hype stocks, there's a lot of hype stocks. Now, that's even beyond ARK Funds, although she owns several hype stocks herself. I see them as mostly hype and more like the year 2000 than real earnings and real growth like some of these other companies out here today. So anyways, but we do have to be mindful of what happened in the year 2000. Why? Because that's the last time we saw valuations this high in the market. And I was there and saw what happened to the market. The NASDAQ went down 79% and the S&P went down 56%. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Oh, you thought earnings season was all over, didn't you? Well, arguably, the biggest one of all has not even weighed in yet, Barry, and that's NVIDIA. NVIDIA will report earnings. I don't know why NVIDIA's, they must have a January 31st year-end, which some companies do. But anyways, we're going to hear from NVIDIA next week. The $5 trillion baby that's never happened before, there's currently $10 trillion companies, and there's one that's right on the cusp of being a trillion-dollar company, and a couple others knocking at the door, but by
week
far
from the day. Yeah, I guess we just all wait. Don't worry. Don't even need to look at the market until next Wednesday, right?
I mean, basically. No. I hope Michael Burry sleeps well that night, you know. I don't know if he still has his big short position in NVIDIA and in Palantir. I think maybe, you know, that he probably entered that short position at a very lofty time in the lives of these stocks as far as valuations goes. But I don't think NVIDIA's done. I don't think that NVIDIA is done at $5 trillion. I mean, they still got a lot of growth ahead of them. But, you know, you could see a correction, pullback in NVIDIA along the way. And he could cash in his big short position. We'll just have to see. I can't see any reason myself to sell it at the current time. But we have that to look forward to next week, and I do see an article on the horizon out there after NVIDIA does report. We've called it several times the best stock in the market today, and I don't think that you could argue with that. I mean, we said that back in 2023, that there is NVIDIA still the best stock in the market today. Well, it's gone on to become $5 trillion. I put out some pretty godly types of gaudy types of target prices back then that people thought I was nuts. And
surpassed them already.
It's surpassed those and then some. And my article today, I put out some really lofty target prices. And the comments, I always like to look back at those comments. Oh, I stopped reading the article right here when I saw your target price. When I saw the multiple we're using, I'm shorting this stock tomorrow. I'm selling my shares today. Things like that. And that was three years ago.
Yeah, they'll say, we're officially at the top. It's
yes.
Like I look back, I'm like, it's 2 years ago. I'm like,
yes.
Well, not really.
No. And I think we'll see. I mean, when I have fresh numbers, give it a few days for the dust to settle, and then maybe like a week from now, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks from now, we'll have a fresh article out there on NVIDIA. Does it go on to $10 trillion? Well, we'll see. Well, the numbers, it's whatever the numbers justify. Novo Nordisk slashes Wegovy price as Lilly's Mounjaro tops sales. And I was told by a longtime veteran in the pharmaceutical industry that Lilly's drug, especially the weight loss, Zepbound, which is based on tirzepatide, is superior to Novo Nordisk Wegovy, which is based on semaglutide. And I have seen that, and I'm also seeing it show up in the stock. Lilly has by far, Novo Nordisk has been hitting new lows, and I'm seeing it start to show up in value funds. It's got a very, very low P.E. ratio, and for whatever reason, Zepbound, it's almost like Google coming in and slashing Yahoo's market share many years ago, right? When you get a dominant leader in the industry, there's something to be said about that. You want to own the leader, not the laggard. And, you know, at times the runner-up can become kind of really a non-player in the space. Intel fell way behind AMD and never got it back, right?
Yeah, and it's been a fight for both companies. I mean, they've been, you know, obviously, you know, competing against one another, you know, trying to win, you know, additional approvals for the drugs, whether, you know, it was what their initial indication was for or eventually, right, weight loss and whatnot. And then, of course, now trying to go to the oral pill. And then, of course, both of them had to fight, you know, the compounders. I mean, they've had a lot of, you know, even though they've got, you know, such a, both of them have, you know, set themselves apart from the rest of the industry, it's just, you know, it hadn't been an easy fight for either one of them.
No, and you can look at that, you know, I mean, a good example, Uber versus Lyft. I mean, Lyft is a distant second to Uber. Target is a distant second to Walmart. Sham was a distant second to Secretariat in all three races of the Triple Crown, right? And once there's a dominant one, it's very, very difficult. Now, Google has had that market share until Microsoft came along with ChatGPT. And I haven't seen the numbers lately, but I'm sure that's helped. And it's helped Microsoft a lot, and it's hurt Google a lot as far as that goes. Speaking of AMD, they're having a whale of a day after their, what did they have, their investor day yesterday. I mean, Lisa Su continues to hit on all cylinders. Now, we own AMD in our value portfolio. It's a little hard to justify AMD at this level in a value portfolio, and we did book a double. We took our chips off the table in AMD. It was a double for us in less than 3 or 4 months. And you could say, well, Gunderson, you should have hung in there. AMD right now, it's just kind of getting back to its old high, I think. Let me take a look at the chart here of AMD.
The problem with it is it's a volatile one. So as you've mentioned, you know, you kind of move out from these names in the tech space that are a little more volatile and historically have been a little more volatile. You take your win and you either keep it in cash for dry powder for a later date, or you know, you find a
another,
you
know, AMD.
Lower PE name, or like you said, you move some of those profits back into Microsoft and bought a little more Netflix for folks who didn't own it.
Yes, and you've got a sugar high today. The stock is getting back, not quite to it. Its all-time high was 267 about a month ago. I wish I would have sold at 267, but I sold just below 267. Now it's at 262. It's having a big day today. But, you know, it's got a P.E. ratio of 64. That is not low on a relative basis. That's the highest P.E. ratio that it's had in its recent history. So you have to take that into account also. But Lisa Su has done a terrific job at AMD, which is now a $426 billion company. By contrast, her cousin has a $5 trillion company. She's got about one-tenth of that, not even quite one-tenth of that in size. But AMD was a $1 stock not that long ago, while Intel dominated the semiconductor world. And times change. There's leaders and there's laggards, and you want to be with the leaders, not the laggards. And then you have sometimes the laggards, you know. Intel is trying to reinvent itself. And speaking of that, that kind of leads into the next story. Guess who's becoming a big quantum company? IBM. And, you know, doesn't it make more sense to invest in IBM than in Rigetti? I mean, IBM, think of the footprint that IBM has compared to Rigetti, and there would be a good example of moving down the chain a little bit as far as P.E. ratios go. You know, with AMD at a P.E. of 64, IBM's got a P.E. of 29, less than one half of that, and IBM's hitting a new 52-week high, a new all-time high today.
Well, IBM always blows my mind because, I mean, to me, they were kind of that first, the first AI with Watson. Remember
That's
where
right.
he'd be like, you know, he was battling, Watson was battling against, you know, Jeopardy, right?
That's right.
You would have thought that they, you know, would have had a bit of a different path. So it's interesting that they're, I mean, they, you know, they were some of the, you know, some of the first in computers, so it makes sense
well,
that they might enter
signs
this
of
quantum
life, too.
Field of it, right?
Their growth, I look at the last four quarters, and what I look for is acceleration of growth. And all of a sudden, their earnings have gone up 15% the last two quarters when they've been a 1% or 2% grower in the quarters before that. So maybe, just maybe, and they crossed a major milestone in quantum computing today. So there's another good example. If you're looking at rotation into lower PE stocks, that one makes sense. We'll be right back. You gotta go where you wanna go, do what you wanna do, And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. IBM unveils new quantum processor. It expects to offer fault-tolerant computing by 2029. Okay, well, that's still, 3 years out there on the horizon. But it's not the 10 years that Jensen Huang was talking about.
Doesn't sound as far away.
Quantum Nighthawk is capable of delivering 30% more complex circuits and expected to come to users actually by the end of this year. So anyways, like I say, don't count them out. Another one I saw here today that's interesting, the big oil stocks are breaking out all of a sudden, and I think it's because of Russia. He's starting to feel the pinch, the heavy sanctions on countries that are buying Russian oil have kind of shut down his oil production, so that lowers the supply in the marketplace. But the one I saw that interested me, guess who's getting in on the data center space? Big oil. Chevron, poised to deliver its first AI data center, those are all buzzwords you see, power project in West Texas. And I also saw at their Investor Day, and this caught my eye, they are aiming for 10% annual growth in free cash flow and earnings through 2030. Man, if they can do that, this stock is cheap. They're also cutting their CapEx outlook. So I'm just going to look here and see what kind of growth rate I'm currently using in my valuation for Chevron. And if I up that to 10%, I mean, the company is putting that out publicly, meaning they're probably going to do that and beat it. But you never know.
That earnings game, yeah, of course.
They can't control oil prices on the world stage, but I'm just going to look at what my valuation is currently using as a growth rate. I'm using 8. Well, okay, so if you up it to 10, that's going to help. It also has a
25% increase in earnings growth, essentially.
And their dividend yield is 4.4%. So you probably never thought you'd hear this from Gunderson, but Chevron becomes a potential player for our maybe our value, our value slash relative value portfolio. You do have, I mean, you don't have, the world is not as mean and unkind to the oil stocks, even though they are meeting in Brazil for the big climate change conference. But a lot of countries aren't even showing up to that anymore, yeah. Including, I don't see Trump, you know, down there buzzing it with his big, giant presidential airplane or anything like that. But anyway, Chevron, if you look at the multiple, P.E. ratio is 19. which is a lot cheaper. It has been growing by 8%, and they're saying that they can up that to 10%. If they could consistently do that, you know, this definitely, I'm going to watch the chart. It's in pretty much a deadly dull sideways trend. And that's why I say the last thing I always look at is the chart for a current technical picture of the stock. And I would, if there was a technical pattern, I don't know, in CMT school, did they teach the yawn pattern, Barry? When you yawn, you look at the chart and you yawn.
Nothing happening. Nothing happening chart?
No, nothing. Dead in the water. That's it. Now, here's a bond I wouldn't bite on. Lucid. They priced an $875 million convertible debt offering. That's toxic. That's even more toxic than some of these private debt. Well,
I mean,
you know what?
At least Rivian has the backing of Amazon, right? I mean, Lucid, you know, and Amazon, I mean, they use Rivian, you know, vehicles to deliver packages. So they're kind of selling to themselves in that sense. But, yeah, poor Lucid. I mean, I know they've got some backing by the
Saudi Arabia.
By the Saudis, but I mean, you know, it's just.
I would not
love
them.
I think I've seen one on the road. Like, and it wasn't a bad looking car, but I mean, like, I've literally seen one, and I've probably seen, you know, 1,000 commercials for them.
Well, you know what? You know what makes a deadly dull chart look good? Lucid's chart. Look at Lucid's chart. It looks like Lucifer's chart here. It looks like it's headed straight to hell. This thing was $34. I really question their going concern. They're now a $4.9 billion company. They're a small cap. This stock was $648 a share. It had no business being there. That's split adjusted. Now it's at $15 a share. From $648 down to $15. And they want to raise money in a debt offering?
Convertible debt offering, even worse.
Does it come with a convertible? I'd rather have a convertible car, Lucid, than the convertible debt. Oh, this does not look good at all. Now, I just want to tell you that private debt is a step below Lucid, right? At least Lucid is publicly traded and liquid. You know, there's one out there that makes my skin crawl and my hair stand up, this Y Refi. Have you seen them? They're basically raising money and then turning around and lending it out, right? And you're making like 10% because they're lending it out at 12 and 13%.
Some unsecured note too. I mean, it kind of reminds me of, remember those old crowdfunding sites from years ago that, you know, it was like crowd lending, remember? And you could,
and then the crowd disappears. Where did the crowd go with my money?
Yeah.
And I had a guy, you know, he hit me up. He says, "Bill, I'm doing a little private debt offering on a home that I've own over here, and I got a big mortgage on it. I'm selling $50,000 tranches. If you'll loan me $50,000, I'll pay you back within 6 months, and you'll earn 8%, something like that." Oh, no, that's like toxic. I don't think anybody who did that deal
just
with
a handshake.
Him,
a handshake deal too. That's all.
No thanks. But I look at that. Why Refi is just a much bigger scale.
Yeah.
They'll probably sue me for slander or something like that. I'm just telling you, I've seen this stuff over the years. Private debt is really, really toxic stuff, toxic waste. And I'm looking at this chart of Lucid. It looks horrible. Okay, on that happy note, I got to get to work. I got a lot of charts to look at. I'll be on Twitter all day, now known as X. But more than that, I'll be sending out messages to our subscribers and clients throughout the day that like to get those messages from Gunderson. I call them On the Water Reports, from directly on the water. To get signed up for those, GundersonCapital.com. To set up an appointment with us, 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.